How About Them Podcast with Landon McCool.
How about them Cowboys indeed?
Hello, welcome back to another episode of the How About Them Podcast. I am your host, Landon McCool. Big news today. Romo has officially, not officially retired, but he has been released by the Dallas Cowboys with the intention of joining up CBS Sports as the lead color guy with Jim Nantz to be the A-team for their football broadcast. So, yeah, I mean, it's kind of hard to have your podcast completely derailed by news like this, but obviously Romo retiring from the Cowboys kind of only happens once in your lifetime. So, Marcus Mosher is going to join us. We are still going to have a whole segment about cluster breakers, because we got segments of clusters of positions at certain spots in round one, two, and three that, Marcus and I are going to have debates over player A versus player B and kind of talk about the thinking of how each of them fit in the Cowboys system. But obviously, we're both going to comment a little bit about the Romo situation. I'm mostly going to let Marcus kind of say his thing in a second, but I'll just add in, I spoke earlier, probably mid-season, I think, when Romo, came out and spoke about, handing the reins over to Dak, about my feelings about Romo, and he has been the Cowboys' face of the franchise for a decade, essentially, and it's been a drawn out process. And painstaking at times. But I will say that, at the same time, it seems like this all kind of developed very quickly. So it's been a bittersweet ride. And I couldn't ask for a better way for it to end, honestly. I think that, it would have been painful to watch Romo play for another team. So I think this is the situation that kind of fits everybody the best, and I know that obviously the level of heartbreak to not see him, walk off the field with a Lombardi trophy in his hand exists there for a lot of Romo fans. But I do think that the guy is walking off the field into a pretty incredible life. So cheers to that for sure. But let's get Marcus in here and let's discuss the whole situation, shall we? All right, it's time for some inter-squad scrimmage with Marcus Mosher. Marcus is a writer for the BR1000, which is the prestigious Bleacher Report's ranking system. And do you have a specialty, Marcus, or do you kind of just generally rank as they ask you?
I do the NFC wide receivers and tight ends every single week.
So he doesn't know anything about anybody else, so don't ask him, guys.
Nope, that's it. That's all. Yeah, correct.
So, I thought it was great to have Marcus on here to kind of, because we do this kind of debate all the time on Twitter, so I thought it'd be at least entertaining to maybe do this, verbally instead of through text. The funny thing is we scheduled this, I think, 2 days ago, and we came up with this great idea of kind of cluster busters and how to distinguish certain players in certain rounds. And determine which one might be a better fit and that sort of thing, and then all that happens. And what comes out today, Marcus? What news breaks today?
Our favorite quarterback of all time, Tony Romo, retires.
Yes,
unfortunately.
Yes. So,
put words in your mouth.
Yeah.
Sorry about that.
No. That's, I was asking you to. I feel like we'd be remiss if we didn't discuss this. So, we will get to our main topic, but real quick, let's just have a quick conversation about what this means. First of all, he officially has not, I don't think he's actually filed, they've refiled the retirement paperwork yet. They officially released him. And I think they did with the June 1st designation. So technically his rights are not owned by the Cowboys anymore. So he could, if he wanted to hop onto a team, I guess he could. But he did announce, with CBS Sports this morning that he's joining Jim Nantz is part of their A-team broadcast to take the place of I can't even think of a nice thing to say about Phil Sims.
Just say Phil Sims. Yeah,
I guess this is a family show, and I shouldn't just say the address.
The people know.
He is Phil Sims is the living version of the Phil Sims gif of the teabag coming out of his mouth. So, yeah, these people that are complaining about Tony Romo taking over for Phil Sims can, I don't know, watch football every once in a while, I guess. But I did want to get, you know, look, I've made my thoughts about Tony Romo well known on this podcast, you know, weeks and weeks and actually maybe months ago, when he kind of made the announcement, you know, midseason that he was, I don't know, not coming back as the starting quarterback or whatever that midseason announcement was that he did. I love the guy. I also find that your perspective is very different than mine. And that's why I wanted you to comment on it because, you know, I am admittedly a older than mid 30s gentleman. So I remember Danny White. I mean, I remember very clearly, you know, Troy Aikman being drafted and all that stuff. Like, but for guys like you, Marcus, like Romo has really been the Cowboys quarterback for most of your, you know, fandom. So, talk to me about that and talk to me about how, I guess that this day affects you differently than me.
Right. So, I mean, I've been a Cowboy fan my entire life. But I don't really remember much of Troy Aikman's career. I think one of the games that really sticks out for me for Aikman is that 99 opener against Washington in overtime. But after that, there's not much, or before that, I don't remember anything of Aikman. So I don't remember Aikman. I don't remember Staubach because I wasn't alive. I wasn't alive for Danny White. So my fandom really started with Quincy Carter, Chad Hutchinson, Drew Henson, Clint Sterner. Any other fantastic names I'm forgetting?
If you are, then let's continue to forget.
Tony Banks?
No, let's, maybe. Like I said, continue to forget.
Right. So from basically 2001 until 2006, the Cowboys were not a fun team to watch. I mean, they had one year, I think they had a winning record in 2003 with Quincy Carter at quarterback. But I wouldn't say that that team was fun to watch. I mean, they played good defense and ran the ball. But when Romo took over as a starter in 2006, it was the first time you felt like the Cowboys had a true franchise quarterback. And one of the things that I'll always love about Romo is that anytime he played in a game, you felt like they had a chance to win that game. Now, obviously, they didn't win every game. They lost to teams they shouldn't have lost to. But he gave you a really good chance to win. And that made watching Dallas Cowboy football exciting. And I'm going to miss that because Romo was a player that I think we connected to because, you know, he was fun. He was kind of a down-to-earth guy. We always liked the rags-to-riches kind of story. We're just going to miss him because he was a great player. He made football fun. For a decade, the Cowboys were a team that was always in the spotlight. They were always playing meaningful games. I saw the stat from RJ Ochoa today that Dallas never played in a meaningless game with Tony Romo at quarterback, and that's kind of amazing. So for me, he'll always be that first Dallas Cowboy franchise quarterback that I remember. And I'm always going to be a fan of Romo. I wish him well on CBS. I think he's going to do a fantastic job. I'm looking forward to see what the future holds for him.
Me too, because if you think about the fact that, you know, he was really the first quarterback who, you know, I think in Dallas media, there's always controversy around all these guys. You know, I think you go back all the way back to Don Meredith and all those guys. And there was, you know, all kinds of talk about him. And, you know, I mean, I'm from Dallas. So, like, I remember talking to my grandfather and my grandfather complaining about the same kind of things that, like, typical Dallas fans do, except just, like, with different names and different places. And it's Clint, mm-hmm. it's Clint Sterner as opposed to Jerry Jones, and it's, you know, Danny White or whoever's quarterback at the time. And I think the funny thing is that of all those guys, to me, it felt like Romo was the most polarizing, which is really shocking to say because, I mean, I think the Dallas Cowboys quarterback is inherently an extremely polarizing position. But I do feel like part of that polarization and that misconception of him nationally is what drove a lot of his really, you know, more avid followers to really love him more, right? It's because they felt like he was misunderstood. And like, and I feel like that is, you know, I think that is where a lot of people are taking hurt right now, is because, I mean, me included, dude. I mean, I spent hours on several different mediums with a whole bunch of people across the country, you know, defending Tony Romo as good enough to win a Super Bowl, or, you know, good enough to win a championship, blah, 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 blah. And, you know, to see him kind of go without getting that. I mean, it's not defeat, because, you know, it's not like the person's point was proved, because the point's stupid to begin with, that it's a quarterback that wins a championship by themselves. I think Tony lifted some really bad teams to some really high aspirations on his own. But, you know, I think to suggest that he somehow has an incomplete resume or a not good career because he didn't win a Super Bowl, I think is ludicrous. I mean, he had incredible success, and especially when you consider where he came from, it's just it's unbelievable to what a story he is. And the fact that he didn't get, you know, like you said, we as a country, I think, love rags to riches stories. And the fact that he didn't get his like proper recognition as America's underdog, which he should have, is like, it's so crazy to me that the perception so quickly became the spoiled star quarterback, when that was never who that guy ever was, really. Even when during the Jessica Simpson days, that really was not ever who Tony Romo was.
Right, and we always thought that he was going to have this storybook ending where, you know, he wins a championship and then he's off to retirement. But unfortunately, that's just not the way it worked. But back to your point about him, you know, lifting up some of these bad teams. Those teams in 2011, 2012, and 2013 were awful. Mm-hmm. It was a miracle that he got them to 8-8 every single year. Mm-hmm. I posted on Twitter just today that, I mean, Dallas had basically 3 weeks in a row where they gave up 51, 49, and 45 points. I mean, it was unbelievable how bad those defenses were in 2013 and 2012. But, you know, not every story gets that or that great ending. And I think ultimately Romo's legacy as the years go by will actually probably get stronger, because people will look back and say, why didn't we appreciate this quarterback more?
Yeah.
I think as we go along, his legacy will be cemented. I don't know if he'll get in the Hall of Fame or not, but he'll be thought of as one of the better quarterbacks during the mid to late 2000s.
Honest to God, like if you were going to write, I mean, if you had to choose a way for his career to end, it not be, you know, him walking off, you know, arm around Witten with a Super Bowl trophy, I don't really know like a better way that this could have played out, honestly. I just think, you know, it would have been heartbreaking for the Cowboys fans to see him go play in a different uniform. It would have been ugly if he had to play Dallas. I just feel like this was definitely the best situation for all parties, and I'm glad that Tony was able to kind of come to a sensible realization that, you know, I'm still a young person, relatively speaking, and I've got a young family. I could spend a lot of time with them, and I have the rare opportunity to kind of do a job that I love that's going to pay me really good money, and I already have really good money, and I get to spend time with my family. And I think he made a choice that was not easy, obviously extremely difficult for him to make personally, just because of the drive he has and that, you know, that clearly all those players have to have in order to even play in the NFL. I'm turning that off must be extremely difficult, but if you're going to do it, like, he is settling into such a fantastic situation, can't be too disappointed, you know?
Right, and if you're a fan of Tony Romo, he's not going away anytime soon.
You're going to be
hearing him, what, maybe 18, 20 times a year on Sundays and Thursdays, and I'm not going to be shocked if Romo quickly becomes one of the best broadcast guys out there. He is incredibly smart, he's well-spoken, he's funny. It won't shock me if Romo's legacy, when we look back 30 years from now, is actually in broadcasting. I think he is going to do so well in that field.
I agree, and I'll end it with this, is that you and I are both obviously big fans of the X's and O's that are involved in football, and I think that we get a level of enjoyment out of that out of football because of that knowledge and because of that love for the X's and O's that I think not everybody enjoys. I love the idea of Tony Romo, and I think he is also a big proponent, just based on some of the things he said today, of Tony Romo kind of serving as another, just another voice to kind of be a gateway for people to learn the deeper parts of the game. Because I think the more you understand how intricate and how difficult and how complicated the game is, I think your love for it becomes more complicated and deeper. So I hope, as an ambassador to the sport, I really do think he is going to be a fantastic addition to the media and like I said, as someone who's going to bring the deeper parts of the game to the people. So speaking of the people, let's get the people what they want, Marcus, and that is you and I arguing about draft prospects.
Ah, it's going to be fun.
Okay, so basically what we did is, like we said, it's kind of like cluster busters, basically, because, you know, one thing that is you'll notice throughout the draft is the kind of runs of position groups at different points. And clearly the spots that the Cowboys have the most interest is on the defensive side of the ball, and specifically in the kind of pass rusher defensive back situation. So we picked out four different kind of scenarios, round three type groups, one defensive line and one safety, a second round cornerback grouping, and then we're going to start off with first round defensive ends, and then one of us is going to take one player and the other one's going to take the other player, and then we're going to stand on the table and let you decide. But you're going to vote in your head or scream at the speaker that's playing this podcast, because the results really don't matter until the Cowboys end up drafting someone. So first grouping is round one defensive ends. Like I said, I am going to take TJ Watt, and Marcus is going to take Charles Harris. And I have made the mandate to Marcus that we are going to try to say something nice about the other person's player first, just to kind of get it out there that, you know, I don't hate any of these guys that we're debating about. We're just playing the roles of people basically trying to make their pitch for each of these players. So Marcus may hate some of my guys. In fact, I feel pretty good.
You hate Charles Harris.
I don't hate Charles Harris. God, we're going to go. Okay. You know what? Just for that, you got to start first, and you got to start.
Oh, that's fun.
You start with saying something nice about TJ Watt, you rapscallion bastard.
Okay. So here's the thing with TJ Watt. From an athletic standpoint, he's everything that you want in a pass rusher. He's got the length, he's got the wingspan, he's got the bloodlines. He even has the production. He had 11 and a half sacks at Wisconsin last year. I think it, with the right team and in the right scheme with the right coach, I think he can be a pretty solid pass rusher in the NFL. Whether that happens right away or not remains to be seen, but I think people are getting Watt right in that he is an athletic guy that you take a chance at the bottom of the first round, and you just hope that with the bloodlines and the athletic ability that it works out. But for me, I would rather take a player that I have more confidence in my ability to project what he's going to be in the NFL. I like Charles Harris because I like that when he gets to camp, he's going to have three moves that he can use on NFL tackles and he can win with. He can win with power, he can win with his explosiveness off the edge, and he knows how to counter, and he's got a fantastic spin move. That part of the projection I love because I can see what he's going to do on the field for me. I know the measurables weren't great, but that's typically what happens with these Missouri guys. I don't know what's going on in the program, but they just don't test that well, but they turn out to be pretty good players. I think Harris is going to be, in year two and year three, maybe a 6 to 8 sack a year guy. And while that may not sound like much, that's basically the ceiling of what you're getting at the bottom of the first round. So I like that safety of knowing that I'm going to be getting a good player from the SEC, from a school that produces really solid pass rushers.
So I really like Harris. I tend to think that, you know, that I think that the points you made are all very solid. I think that I like his burst. I like his spin move. I agree that having burst and a counter move is enough to get you in the NFL immediately, because it's a win and a counter. It's a full system of pass rushing right off the bat. Now, I tend to think that where I like Watt more is because the athletic translation to the NFL to me seems a lot cleaner. Charles Harris, you know, I think there was a problem at first with Harris, you know, when the combine numbers came out, and at least this is where I'm at. With me, I like to see the combine numbers because I like for it to confirm what I see on tape. And if it doesn't, then I want to go back and see the tape, and I want to know why. And when his numbers came out, I didn't expect him to blow up the three cone, but I sure as hell didn't expect him to run close to a 7.5, you know, three cone. So when that happened, I went back and watched some more, and that made me feel a little bit better about him. But I still think that where he gets off at a very, very quick rate, I wonder about his ability to continue to do that against NFL offensive tackles. And I do think that with Watt, you get a guy who has a better body for what they're asking them to do. I think he's got he's a guy that's going to be able to come in and play the run, I think, almost immediately. And I think that is immediately something that you worry about with Harris. And so really, to me, you come in and Watt, I think, is going to be a guy who can play the run better than Harris right away. And I feel like he may be only slightly behind where Harris is as a pass rusher, just based on, you know, in totality of physical tools and refined technique. So I think when you get that and you get a guy who you're just wondering about whether he can obtain that upside, and that is where you consider the fact that his name is TJ Watt, and that, you know, he's JJ Watt's brother, and that kind of work ethic and that kind of, you know, and not even that, like beyond that, because JJ Watt has another brother that's in the NFL, and he's got, I think he's got two brothers, if I'm not mistaken, two other brothers. And they're not TJ Watt, or they weren't as highly regarded as TJ Watt. I think the difference is that this kid has the physicality, the tools, and he works out with JJ, like they're very cloned in personality. I just trust that package to kind of get it done, to get to that ceiling. And that doesn't mean that I don't think Harris is good. I just think you can't ignore the certain amount of measurables there. And I think that's where it becomes that. And you hated this analogy, but it becomes the two guys that run to first, you know, one with perfect technique and one with bad technique. And not that Harris is the perfect technique guy, like, cause I do think he has upside. I do think he is still raw as well and still can go ways up. I just think Watt's athleticism is a little bit higher, and he gives me a little bit better floor as well. So that's
right. And I can see that, and I think it's just that at the bottom of the first round, are you swinging for upside, or do you want to add a solid player in the first 2 years of his contract? Or, like, you want to add the guy that can produce right away. And I'm guessing Dallas will swing for the fences with Watt over Harris, but I would go with Harris.
And listen, I would be thrilled with either, frankly. I mean, like, that's the truth. Because I agree. I think, like you said, I think Harris, and we talked about it, pass rushers do not produce at a high rate usually as rookies. I mean, it's kind of rare, but there could be a situation with Harris, which could happen with Watt as well. We don't really know what's going to happen when we get him fully focusing on firing off the ball from a 3-point stance. But I think there's a situation with Harris that I feel confident about, that if you get him in here, the sum of the pass rushing parts or the totality of the pass rush will be better than the sum of its parts, if that makes sense. So, okay, let's move on to the next group. Second round cornerbacks. We've got Tease, Tabor, and Moreau from UCLA. So I guess I got to start off, huh?
Yep.
Okay, so
say something nice about my boy, Tess.
You know, I think that, you know, listen, people have every good right to freak out about his 40 time. I absolutely can understand why that would be the case. But again, I do think that you have to kind of go back to what you see on tape, and you can't just take the athletic numbers as is. You got to understand why he's testing this way, but not maybe playing at that same level. Because when I watch T-Staber, I definitely see a guy who, that I didn't expect a 4.5 player. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, I didn't expect the guy to run a high 4.4 or anything like that. He looks like he may have a little bit of issue with his foot speed. Now, where he makes up for a lot of that is he has a good zone technique, and I think he is aggressive on the ball, and I think you can work with that. But that's not my guy. My guy, I want a guy who's going to be able to function in, you know, because listen, the Cowboys played roughly, you know, around 70% a combination of cover one and cover three. Okay. So I think that you need a guy that is going to be able to play both of those techniques equally well, and then also be able to function in some of the other zones. Now, I don't have issues with, I think, Tabor's way to play zone. I think he could probably especially play cover two pretty well. But I, as far as being able to mix up all those coverages and function well, that's where I really think Fabian Moreau is going to be able to do it. He's got the length, he's got the athleticism, he's got the size to do what it takes, the explosiveness. You see him, you know, be one of those guys who can, you know, cover guys across the field, cover guys up the field. You know, he's also, you know, he's the Cowboys right kind of guy. You know, he's a captain. He's got great off the field situation. I think that, you know, what he's going to be able to do is use his athleticism in man. He's going to be able to press. He's definitely going to need to develop some strength a little bit, especially to kind of really unleash his arms as a press corner. But I think he's a big guy playing corner. He can really be effective in zone right away. And I think he can come in and work as a man corner, and then continue to work on his skill set to really refine and add strength to kind of help refine his press coverage technique.
All right. So you hit on all the things with Moreau. He's a great athlete, right kind of guy, all those things. That's about as much as I'm going to say nice about him.
Wow. Okay? Wow. Okay.
Yeah, okay. I know. Okay, well, listen to this. He's got 51 career games, and he's created 3 turnovers. Now, we know Dallas's scheme is predicated on being able to take the ball away. Why do I want a cornerback that's played 51 games, started 40, that has 2 career interceptions on top of a pretty lengthy injury history? He's got a Liz Frank injury. He tore his pec at the at his pro day. He got nicked up at the East-West Shrine game. I just don't know if this is a player that you can count on to hold up in the NFL. One of the things I like to do is look at if guys are hurt in college, are they going to get hurt in the NFL? And that's a pretty good predictor if they're going to be able to stay healthy. Now, it's not always the case, but if you can't stay healthy in college, you're probably not going to do it in the NFL. On the other hand, with Tez, or Tease, or however you say his name, we're just going to call him Tabor. The 4.62 at the combine doesn't concern me because he is a press man corner that can play in zone. He can play in off. He can tackle. He's got the size. He had 8 interceptions over the past 2 years. To me, he is a very similar player to Josh Norman, and I think Josh Norman ran in the high 4.6s at the combine as well. But Tabor matched up well against all the SEC receivers. He wasn't beaten over the top. I love guys that can play well in the SEC and that can take the ball away. And one of the things that Tabor has that I absolutely love in a cornerback is he's got confidence. And he's got the swagger, and he has the alpha dog mentality where if he gets beat, he's going to come back and he's going to get you later on in the game. He's not afraid of getting beat once. He's going to make enough plays throughout the game to be worth the pick. And at 60, if Dallas is looking at both of these corners, give me the guy that played in the SEC, that took the ball away, and has the size that they're looking for.
Yeah, I like the comparison of these two because they are actually they're actually pretty different players, and almost opposites, really. But I like both of these guys quite a bit. I think I like Fabian a little bit more, and that's again why I took him in this debate. But I do think that the T slander has gotten a little bit out of control. So there,
he's a good player. He's a really good player.
I think he's a really good player, but I think you got to know what you're getting out of that player. You know, he's a playmaker. He's going to give up some plays in the NFL. Like I have no doubt.
Now, absolutely.
The question is, how well can you limit that? I mean, he's not in the same way. He's like Josh Norman. He's also like Janoris Jenkins, you know, where but Jenkins has the thing that gives me pause is that Jenkins has a little bit better athleticism to recover from his issues. So you got to be able to
high variance corners.
You got to know what you're getting, and then you got to be able to either cover up for that or, you know, kind of build it into your risk tolerance, I guess. Okay.
Tabor or Dory Jackson real quick.
Well, you know, it's kind of this is the kind of thing I was talking about with on another podcast, actually, is that it's tough to comment on it because I don't really. Okay, are you talking about as an outside corner?
Just as a corner.
Because I don't know what I don't know what their plan is with Adoree Jackson. Like I kind of like him a little bit better inside, like and moving inside and out, like or with the potential of playing safety. I kind of like him almost in a. What's his name? Chikale Adobe. I got to get these names down. But I like him almost in that kind of role where you move him around a little bit. Whereas I think you leave Tez outside. Like I think I think if you ran like a cover three scheme, I think he'd be great in that. And I think he'd be great in a cover two scheme. And the Cowboys do kind of run that, but they run enough man that it gives me pause. I don't love him in press man. So I think that's part of my issue. And maybe that's why I think Adoree Jackson's arrow is also straight up, whereas I don't know how – I think Tees is kind of what he is, and that's a playmaker, right. And that's useful. But I also think that that's not – I don't know how much better he's going to get from where he is. So I think he'll get better because he'll start to recognize routes and that sort of thing, but – I don't know if it's about unleashing his athleticism the way it is with Adoree Jackson to me. So, next up, we've got Evans and Thompson. So you have Justin Evans and I have Tedrick Thompson. So you start and remember to say something nice.
Well, to be honest, I don't really like either of these safeties. I think after the first two rounds, I'm out on the safety class.
Okay.
But Thompson is an interesting guy because created a ton of turnovers at Colorado. I believe he had 13 interceptions in his last 3 years there.
Are we about to make you a hypocrite here? Are we about to make you a hypocrite? Is that what's about to happen here?
A little bit. A little bit. Listen, though.
All right.
So I've got a theory on this one.
Okay.
Or a player comp. So Thompson takes the ball away a lot. I don't love how he tackles, but he's got a very athletic frame. I'm just kind of looking over my notes on him. An athletic frame. He's got speed at the position. He reminds me a lot of – this is a name. Do you remember Jerod Holloman from Louisville a couple years ago?
Oh, but come on.
Yeah, so the guy that had like 14 interceptions.
He tackles so much better than that guy, though.
But does he?
Yes, he does. Oh, my God.
I've got a six-round grade on Thompson. I'm not a fan. I'm not a fan at all of Thompson. Whereas at least with Evans, I know what I'm getting. Evans is a high-energy – downhill thumper that can be either your strong safety. He can be your new J.J. Wilcox. And if you liked Wilcox, then you'll like Justin Evans. If you weren't a fan of Wilcox, then you need to find a different safety because that's what Evans' game is. He'll come down. He'll thump you. He's got the athleticism to maybe be able to cover tight ends in the NFL. But if you're looking for, you know, your prototypical strong safety that is a leader, high energy, going to be one of your emotional captains on your defense, Justin Evans is a good guy to target in the third to fourth round. I kind of think he's going to go higher because of his athletic ability, but not huge on either of these safeties, but I would take Evans higher.
I'm a big fan of Jerod Evans as well. I think Justin Holloman is I can't believe that you stole my Jerron Holloman, because that's who I think Justin Evans is, frankly. I mean, he's the guy that missed which one of these two guys missed 20 tackles last year?
Evans.
Yes, that's right. Evans missed 20 tackles. So to me, that is Jerron Holloman. I guess maybe you're going to throw back in my face that Holloman wouldn't at least try. But I think Tedrick Thompson does try and is a pretty decent tackler.
Look, he's a drag down tackler that you gotta play on just third downs, though.
That was what I was gonna say. Is to me, he's a nickel player. I think both of these guys are nickel players. I think that Tedrick Thompson offers you a little bit of versatility because I think he can play as like a true nickelback or a free safety. Whereas Evans, to me, is like a nickel safety. Like that's what his role is. So he's even more limited than Tedrick Thompson is. I like Thompson in the kind of like, and I'm not comparing him to this guy, but I like him in that sort of Honey Badger role. Like he's not nearly as physical as Honey Badger, but in that kind of, you know, interior defensive back, whether it be nickel back, whether it be free safety, I think he can do that role well. And he's smart. He's intuitive. He knows how to make plays on the ball. I think he's a decent tackler. Not everyone does, but I think he could really, you know, he could really provide a spark at a low cost for a defensive backfield as kind of a utility, you know, nickelback sort of guy.
I don't love him.
I know you don't love either one of these guys. I like them for what they are, but I don't like them, either one of them, as a starting safety or a starting corner necessarily. So
I like Eddie Jackson from Alabama better. If you're going to take a safety in the middle round, that's the guy I would go after.
I look at him as kind of the same as these guys. I think he could probably start, but I don't know.
Just take Melifonwu in the first and you're fine. Yeah. Just take Melifonwu in the first and you'll be fine.
Where are you playing Melifonwu? In the Cowboys defense.
Anywhere you want. You can put cornerback, strong safety, free safety. You can do it all. Listen, he's gonna be on the short list.
Can he rush the passer at 28?
Sure, why not? Okay. He's 224 pounds. He's the same size as Vic Beasley.
All right. So, speaking of pass rushers, brings us to our final category, round three defensive ends. And speaking of guys that neither one of us like, no, I like these guys okay, but I don't see well. We're gonna make our debates, and then I'm gonna flip this, because after thinking about this, I may have wanted to choose the other side on this, but is it my turn to go first? Yeah,
sure, why not?
Yeah, nice. so I got Terrell Basham, which means I gotta say something nice about Tanoa
Passanio. I got you.
So Passanio is, you know, monster, like an absolute monster. I mean, he looks like a kind of slightly more filled out David Irving. Like, So looking at that, I can see it. I tend to think, you know, first of all, let me back up. I kind of got turned on to him late because, as I've mentioned here in other podcasts before, I'm not a year round draft guy. Like, because of all the Cowboy stuff week to week that I got to do, like, I don't get to these guys. I definitely get the coach's version of the draft season, whereas I come in late to the process. I talk to the guys who have been doing this all year round, and then I kind of get my own list of prospects to kind of do further evidence on. So he kind of slipped through the cracks because most of the people I talk to put him as a two-gapping 3-4 defensive end. And when I started watching him, I was like, "Oh no, this guy's a pass rusher, or he's a one gapper at least." And I think he could be a really good 4-3 left defensive end. But I also think that we don't have like a very strong level of certainty on this. Now, the reason I prefer Terrell Basham is because obviously you've gotten to see a lot more of what he is going to do in the NFL. He's, you know, and I think there's a little bit less projection here, and if we're talking about, so it's weird because it's actually a kind of the opposite argument of Charles Harris and T.J. Watt.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, it's, but I think the thing that gives me a little bit more interest in Basham is, even though I think that these guys are probably both left defensive ends, I think that Basham could play right defensive end. Like if you worked on him, I don't know that he's that explosive, but I think that, you know, he at least has the body type that if you got him to focus exclusively on get off, on working on kind of getting around the corner, he may be able to provide something for you there. Whereas I feel like Tano's, like, even though he's maybe I don't think he's probably as good as David Irving, even though he looks like he's a rocked out David Irving. I think he could be as good as David Irving. I don't think he's nearly as explosive. But I also think that the Cowboys have like eight guys like that do what he would do, you know? So I just think from a utility situation, I just don't know that, like, I don't know that I have time to develop this guy. And especially if I'm taking him in the third round, I don't know that I'm going to get everything that I would want out of him when I have a cheaper, more explosive, potentially better guy underneath him. So give me your thoughts.
All right. So I'm actually a big fan of Basham. So this is going to be kind of weird. I'm actually arguing for,
you know what, we should have flopped this now.
It's all right.
Because
it's okay. I
go for it.
All right, we're good. So I like Basham quite a bit. I actually think he can play right defense end, but I actually sat down and watched some good all-22 cut-ups of him 2 weeks ago, and I was really impressed. I think he can play right defense end because he, throughout his career, he showed that he's been a better player every single year. He's improved his sack total almost every single year. He had 11.5 sacks in the MAC last year, played very well against Tennessee. I think he's got the quickness and the length to win on the outside. I do agree that his best fit might be as a left defensive end. But back to Passanio. When I watched him,
Passanio.
My first Passanio. I thought of David Irving as well, and that's a pretty fair comparison because they have the massive wingspan. He has got an 84.5 inch wingspan. But I actually thought of a different comparison. I thought he looked to me a little bit like Jason Hatcher when Hatcher was a 3 technique in Dallas. Hmm. He's got the massive size. He's very tall at almost 6'7". But the quickness that he has, I think, would be really good if you used him inside as a 3 technique. And I know you can use him on the outside. If he is with Rod Marinelli, I wouldn't be surprised if he played a lot of 3 technique, worked on some of his hand technique. He's a flexible player. He's got some bend. He's got some speed. I just think he could take advantage of some lesser guards inside. I like Passanio. I like that I don't have to spend a top 60 pick likely on him. To me, I won't be shocked if Rob Marinelli gets in the draft room on that Thursday night and says, hey, we don't need a pass rusher in the first round. I can find you one in the third round. And he looks at Passanio and Basham, and that's just two guys he's narrowed it down to. I think those are both guys that can find a role in Dallas's defense right away.
Yeah, and honestly, it's funny because we're all arguing opposite things of how we feel at this point, but you know, I just feel the more and more I look at this, the more and more I kind of just, I don't want them to draft a pass rusher like outside of 28. Like I just don't feel like, you know, and I think we talked about this a little bit more, but it's not a numbers issue there. Like it's a talent issue at the top. So I feel like I need to get as good a pass rusher as I can get in here. So I feel like, and it's just that way. And it's easier. It's going to be easier to get good talent at the, you know, defensive back spots, you know, in second, third, and fourth round, I feel like. So, I don't know. Looking at these guys, the more I look at them, the more I'm like, meh, kind of. And so I think that, you know, at least you're right that Tano at least offers a level of upside at, you know, a position that is obviously important, that is intriguing. But I, like I said, in general, I really have a hard, I really struggle with some of these outside the top 50 defensive ends. I almost feel like at certain points, like, well, how many of these guys are we going to collect? Kind of, because I don't know that any of these guys are necessarily leaps and bounds above anybody else that we've got already. So we'll see. It'll be interesting to see how that all plays out. Anything else before we go, Marcus?
Just one real quick question for you.
Yeah.
Do you think we can narrow down the Cowboys pass rushers at 28 to Watt and Harris? Do you think those are the two options? Are there any other options they'll have?
You know, listen, I don't – this the answer to that to me kind of comes down to, like, exactly how plugged in do you think Brian Broaddus is to the Cowboys? Because, I mean, is Tack, like – Is Tack not in this conversation because people think he obviously will be gone before the Cowboys get to him? Or is it because there's been talk like that they don't want to take him because they feel like they're going to have to kind of redshirt him? Because, I mean,
the answer would be both.
I guess it could, but I mean,
So it's those three, though. It's probably those three.
It's probably those three, okay. I would think, yeah. I mean, because I can't imagine. I think, you know, they clearly are bringing in Barnett. I can't imagine Barnett falls to them, though. I mean, maybe he does. It's definitely. I mean, Lawson to me has always been not part of the conversation. Just because
shout out to John Owning.
Well, I love. Listen, yes, shout out to John, of course. But I love Carl Lawson. I'm a Auburn Tiger. You know, I just think that they clearly have thresholds and he doesn't meet them. I swear to God, he's wearing a Pittsburgh Steelers jersey underneath his shirt at all times. He just looks like a Steeler to me.
I agree.
That's where I think he ends up. And I just think, you know, the only other guy that they're really probably going to look at is Deshaun Hall, because he's going to be a Dallas Day guy. And I think Deshaun Hall doesn't get enough credit for what he is. I think he has some tools to work with, so maybe he could be like a second round guy, like because you're thinking about third, you're really picking a third round player at the 28th pick in the second round. So, I mean, maybe he could be a target if they don't go in the first round with a defensive end. I don't know, because just, you know, he has a level of upside there, but yeah. Outside of that, I tend to think that it's a Watt and Harris, and then I haven't stopped considering McKinley yet. I mean, I guess maybe I should, just because of the situation. I don't know. I like both Watt and Harris, and I think both of them can do some things. And getting either one of those guys makes me excited, I guess. That's how I feel.
Good.
What about you?
I think it's Harris Watt, and then my guess is Kevin King, cornerback from Washington, and Obi. I think that's your short list.
Yeah.
I think those are your four. And Adoree Jackson, I think, is a outside shot to be the other corner. But I think that's your short list.
Do you think they consider Marcus Williams?
Not at 28, no.
Yeah, too rich. I mean, I don't think he's necessarily 28, but I think I am afraid that if they want him, you're not going to get him at either your first pick, because you won't pay that much, and you won't get him at your second pick because he's gone. So.
Right.
All right, guys, that's it for us. Good discussion, Marcus. Thank you so much for coming on. Guys, make sure you follow Marcus on Twitter. It's at Marcus Mosher. That's at MarcusMosher. Follow me on Twitter at McCoolBTB. And until next time, happy trails, everybody.